Thank you. Now, I'm counting you in with the well-known counting teams. Here we go. One, two. Oh, no. Welcome after two. Five.
Edie, Edie, Edie on me, most amazing man there's ever been. He the general, the president, the king of the sea. Edie, Edie, Edie on me.
Look at the history and packed with men. What rising to the top and getting chopped again? No one fathoming the secret of the whole damn thing. You gotta give the population something to see.
Edie, Edie, Edie on me.
Yeah, whatever. But then when the shootout occurred, I was telling Cole about it yesterday. I was loving like the editing and the fact that like even though the backgrounds look really similar and everybody's in the same place, it was amazing like how well they were allowing you to build like a physical copy in your mind of where everyone is in relation to everyone else.
Yeah.
Like, it's really hard. I reckon it'll be really hard to edit that, like, that massive sequence.
The writer-director edited it as well, like, yeah. He was the editor. And
there's, like, so much amazing spatial reasoning in all the editing.
Apparently, when he was in pre-production on the movie, he built the set in Minecraft.
That's a good idea.
To, like, fully understand the 360s and the design of the world.
Yeah, that's
speaking
a good
of which, can I play Minecraft while you do that?
Yeah.
Nice!
So that was probably the my most enjoyable thing about the film.
Yeah.
It's just like, I thought that was really impressive.
Nice.
But yeah, I fell asleep. So I didn't watch the ending. I woke up to see shoot in the head.
Oh,
and then I fell back to sleep again.
She's like, alright, cool, so that's how it all ended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm gonna go sit in the bedroom so I can have...
Just create a new user?
No!
No, because I don't want to come back and see that you've lost, you know, my diamond pickaxe and shit.
But I need to use your things.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't lose anything of importance, because it takes me a long time to get diamonds.
Ah, married life.
Don't use the diamond pickaxe!
Alrighty. Welcome to the Criterion Quest, a continuing podcast series looking at important classics and contemporary films. My name is Chris, and I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Tom.
Yeah, hello.
And we just finished watching the 1974 documentary General Idi Amin Dada by Barbet Schroeder. But before we get into this week's film, we got a couple of emails and things from some listeners that we thought we would bring to the forefront.
Highly unusual.
Yes, yeah. It's been a while since we've had one of these, so we thought we should highlight them. So the first one we got was a comment from a listener named John, who spoke about The Last Temptation of Christ, which was episode 70. So we figured, like, we'll go through your comments and kind of address them and read your wonderful words on the episode. But whether or not we can kind of comment on them, we'll wait and see. Because that was... I was thinking about that before. It was nearly, like, 80 episodes ago at this point, so we've watched a lot of films since
then. It's like a year and a half, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. So, he opens by addressing that by saying, "Perhaps I'm a little late to the party, but I just listened to this episode, and I'd like to add a comment regarding the source material on which the movie is based, the novel by Niko Kazantzakis. I don't know that it's fair to consider this just another story of Jesus." That's in... quotations.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's more like a unique story that happens to feature Jesus as a character. In that it's in that way, the novel can be viewed as an allegory, but not necessarily about religion. I personally have always interpreted it as an allegory about art and the ideal artist. In fact, I'm not sure that Kazantzakis himself took religion very seriously, given that he was a big fan of Nietzsche. So, nice little... fun comment there at the end. But in terms of that, first off, thank you, John, for sending that comment in. It's greatly appreciated. And kind of building a discussion back up again about that film.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting interpretation, and I kind of am bummed if the quotation there is just another film about Jesus. I'm kind of bummed if that's how we viewed the film, because what John's highlighted is super interesting, that Kazantzakis and Scorsese and scriptwriter Paul Schrader kind of managed to construct a film that is actually if you took away the whole religious aspect of, like, the preconceived notion that we all have of who Jesus is, what he was about, and what the message should be, you can then interpret the story as a struggling artist and someone trying to put forth the better ideals and things. It's an interesting take.
Yeah, So, he's trying to build a following based off what we would consider his art.
I guess, yeah.
So he's like almost like a performer?
But I suppose to the degree of, like, he's struggling as if an artist. He's struggling for his movement and his ideals to take hold. In the same way that an artist kind of struggles to get their work out there, I guess. The
recognition.
Yeah, that's kind of how I interpret what John's saying.
Okay, yeah.
Which is a really interesting read on the film, and yeah. Where were you fucking 80 episodes ago, John? Yeah. And the other one came in on the newly christened Facebook page, actually, from Chris Burnett, a listener who said that he really enjoyed the George Washington episode. He's never seen the film, but he has instantly ordered the film based on our episode and our recommendation.
Right on.
Yeah, I kind of responded to Chris on Facebook saying, like, hopefully you'll enjoy it. It's kind of... I was going to say it's a very similar film to, like, Terrence Malick or, like, early Gus Van Sant. So if you can get kind of swept up in that poetry, you should...
Yeah, Gus Van Sant, good comparison.
The kind of poetry of imagery and just kind of letting yourself absorb that, you should have a great time. So hopefully you enjoy it, Chris.
There's nothing much you can't hate about this film.
Yeah, yeah.
You can hate about this film.
Yeah.
No worries.
Yeah. So I guess on that note, we'll move on to this week's film, which is Barbara Schroeder's documentary, General Idi Amin Dada. Plot synopsis, Tom?
Okay. Well, it's a documentary that follows the reign of Idi Amin from 1971 to 1978. He was in power. And this is kind of like the height of his ruling. 74, I think it is, right?
Yeah, 73, 74. It was released in 74, which makes me think it was probably filmed in late 72, 73, that kind of...
Yeah, but what makes this interesting is, although it's kind of edited and put together by the French director, he lets Idi Amin himself effectively take reins of the directing itself.
Mm.
So, you know, it turns out to be a self-portrait, as the title kind of indicates. And all that goes on with that is that you get to see a maniac dictator showboating and delivering extreme propaganda to a foreigner, which is the most abstract, interesting documentary you could find.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that Babette Schroeder is not French.
I thought he was French.
I was hectically looking that up. The film is a French production.
Right. Okay.
But I was like, I need to look this up so we don't get emails.
Fair, yeah.
So we don't get, like, kind of comments saying it's wrong. He's an Iranian-born Swiss director.
Okay.
Yes. So I just want to clarify that.
I do apologize.
Yes, you should. You fucking racist.
Yes.
But no, you're totally right. It's an interesting... it's a very unique documentary in the sense that it is a dictator spouting his own kind of rhetoric directly to the camera and the filmmaker and absolutely reveling in the opportunity to do so. It's kind of... this is going to be a tough one to talk about because filmically there's not a whole lot to it. So I think we're going to end up talking a bit about Idi Amin himself, the aspects of dictatorship, what he actually spouts, what he's talking about, and all of that kind of jazz. But I guess it's, like, in terms of a film, the closest thing you can kind of compare it to is Leni Riefenstahl's Birth of a Nation, in the sense that that film showed the Nazi Pride Brigade and Hitler kind of addressing his army and things. This is, to a lesser extent, a similar kind of film. I feel, reading up on it, that's what Idi Amin seemed to think he was making, was a film that would show him in a great light as a fucking leader of men, as a big powerful man, and instead the filmmaker very cleverly twisted into something else.
Well, apparently they sent off, when he'd finished it, he'd sent off an hour long
Yes.
Cut back to Idi Amin.
Yes.
That was obviously didn't have narration and didn't have half an hour of footage that would paint him in, you know, a potentially crazy
negative light. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Which it makes me think it's probably just the footage of, like, him kind of at marches and inspecting jets and stuff and just like, yes, I'm a great man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, the only technical aspect of this documentary, the very artistic aspect of this documentary, is the sharp cuts.
Yes.
To, you're watching, say, Idi Amin talking about, you know, the actions of the foreign minister, and then right out of nowhere, there is like this very quick cut saying, later, 2 weeks later, this man was found dead in the Nile.
And he was replaced with a supermodel.
That's right. And then it cuts straight back into just Idi Amin talking bullshit to his cabinet again. So there's the artistry there. That's like, that's the main technical flavor of the documentary.
Yeah, which is pretty much used in the sense of Schroeder as a filmmaker being given unprecedented access to this dictator. And whether or not he, like, I'm sure he had to know going in, like, this guy is fucked. And
I mean, he obviously knows his subject matter. He wants to talk about it.
And he very cleverly goes along, he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, no, we'll film this all for you.
Yeah.
And then comes out of it just being like, I'm going to make you look like the biggest fucking clown. Like, or not just, not,
well,
that's
probably
wrong.
There's some respect to it. This is what I like about it. It's not a freak show.
No.
It's not presented as a freak show.
Yeah, I over-embellished that.
That's okay, because you want, like, the urge is
the
there,
urge
to,
is there
to go
like,
and hang shit on this guy.
Because he's a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is some kind of respect. It's like, this man is crazy, and we could just shit on him the whole time, but let's try and understand, like, a little bit what he's all about by letting him just take the reins of this documentary.
Yeah.
So there is some respect.
I think that's a respect of power, I guess. Like, that's how I kind of interpret it. It's like, this man is obviously, to some degree, smart enough and powerful enough to lead a coup d'etat and take over and run an entire country to the point of genocide.
Yeah.
So therefore he must, like, he deserves some modicum of respect, whether it's
I don't mean that you respect the man.
No.
I mean that you respect the journalistic integrity of not hanging shit on,
that's what I mean,
on your subject matter.
I don't respect Idi Amin as a person.
No.
I want to make sure that's clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the way Schroeder allows Amin to just go.
Mm.
And it's very, there's about four or five moments in the film where he just rambles for,
yeah, fucking ages.
For ages, and it's so clever the way that Schroeder just lets it play.
Mm.
Just sits in a simple mid-shot on Amin, ranting and raving, and he starts on a point, and I was saying, like, if you could kind of map the trajectory of where his thoughts and the sentences go, it's all over the map, and it just, he allows the man himself to show how truly insane and ridiculous he is without having to shine a light on it, I guess.
Yeah, or just idiotic, like.
Yeah.
There's a sequence where he's talking to the doctors, and the doctors are asking pretty critical questions.
Yeah.
And you know that he's kind of begins answering the questions, and then it just slowly falls into this kind of pre-written diatribe on, you know, what the doctors should be doing as opposed to what he should be doing about the doctor's situations.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it turns into like a 5 to 7 minute long just spiel of idiocy.
Yeah.
And I love that you can just sit there and watch him and slowly you're going, I've lost it. I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. It's you as an audience lose respect for the man purely because of who he is and what he's saying. It's nothing to do with the film itself, which is powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and it's,
but, but mostly it's scary, man.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
you're going like, this guy's, I can't follow him, he's too much of an idiot. And yet there is so much tension in so many scenes because although he's just being an idiot on screen, everyone else is going like, this idiot will kill me if I fuck up.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can
this
see
man is
that
responsible for the death of nearly half a million people.
Oh yeah.
Like, it's,
remember, like, there's that sequence where he's swimming in the pool and everyone holds back just so that they don't get to the other side of the pool before him.
And he swims like a fucking idiot. Like, swims sideways and, yeah.
Yeah, but then,
and it's similar.
The shot is left going for ages as he swims back and just sits there looking at everybody and breathing heavily.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I'm the best.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like, fuck. What is this man thinking about right now? Like, is he... You get the genuine idea that he's going, was anyone more powerful than me just then? Because I will destroy them.
Yeah. It's an interesting... Like, that's a prime example of what I think the film is... In addition to kind of presenting this horrible dictator in all his ridiculous glory, it's a film that examines ego and narcissism really, really well. And that's a prime example of it.
Mm.
It's so clear to everyone else in the world that these men are, like, doggy paddling so that Idi Amin can spastically win the swimming race. And then gloat in his, like, revel in his glory. And it's just so, like you said, just beautifully lets it linger of, like, this man just like, yeah.
I'm fucking awesome.
I am the best. But we as an audience are smart enough to be like, that guy's fucked. And similarly, there was the other scene where we kind of got that was when he's playing with the band and he's on the accordion and the people are dancing and they look morbid.
Yeah, like, yeah, not having fun.
No.
And then as soon as he stops, like more than half of them just scatter out of the room.
They just try and get as far away from this man as possible. As to not incur his wrath.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, on the surface, listening to him, if you were to believe every word, he's, you know, just the most marvelous ruler ever.
Yeah.
But there's constantly this undercurrent of terror.
Yeah.
Fucking pretty amazing.
And that's what I think makes this documentary special, is those little moments where he lets Amin be Amin. And present to the audience is like an ego and narcissism run amok.
Mm.
And then also the punctuating it with the ruthlessness of that, the examples of like, this man was found dead in the Nile 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
Or talking about how he's a great humanitarian and then cut to the letter he sent to the UN the day after the Munich Olympic disaster with Black September, saying that like, yeah, all Jews suck and Hitler was right. I am super paraphrasing, but like, yeah, that's, yeah. That is what he's like, there's a reason Hitler did this. And you're just like, this is insanity.
Yeah.
You are a fucking monster. And it's just, cuts to charismatic guy sitting by the pool. And you're just, it's shocking.
Yeah. I kind of, it's relatable to the Act of Killing documentaries. You know what I mean? Like those ones.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, like those ones are Oppenheimer films, yeah. Yeah, Act of Killing and The Look of Silence, both of them.
Yeah.
If you have not seen these films, they're not easy watches. They're some of the hardest films you'll ever see.
I actually stopped. I couldn't watch half of the second half of the first one.
They are so good. They're of the best documentary filmmaking that has ever been made.
It's so brutal, man.
Not great.
But that's the same kind of discussion on what an ego,
yes,
and I guess
unchecked ego and unchecked power.
Yeah,
what that can rain onto a population.
But then it's funny how both of them. I mean, all of these people, Idi Amin and all of the Indonesian, generals and warlords or whatever, in The Act of Killing in those films, they all seem to have. They seem to want to make. Some kind of art themselves, the propaganda, the short films.
I think The Act of Killing is more so the one that they focus on. I forget his name, who makes his film, but I think with Amin, it's more it's more the popularity and the ego. Because at the beginning of the film, he boasts about how he is so famous, he's known worldwide, and he sends letters and telegrams to all these other world leaders and things, giving them advice. It's not necessarily an aspect of, like, wanting to create anything, it's an aspect of wanting to be famous.
Just,
Wanting to be known, wanting to be famous, that's kind of what fuels and
a lot of fire under the ego kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's what does it for him, whereas I think, in Act of Killing, it's more so being given an outlet that stokes the fire of the ego, and then in turn this bizarre, interesting creative element comes out of it. I don't think Amin kind of he's not given that opportunity, and I don't think based on what we've seen, okay. It doesn't seem like what something he'd want.
All right. Well, in that case, still recommending.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, I think they're totally apt to bring up. Like that's yeah. On that note, kind of
we should explain what they are, by the way, for people that haven't seen them.
Yeah,
they're about a bunch of warlords.
It's about the Indonesian genocide, mm-hmm. and this filmmaker basically finds this one guy who led death squads and asks him to reinterpret what he did, how he personally interprets his actions, and create a film based on what he did, and it is spectacular in terms of like, wow, he envisions himself as this like 1940s gangster. There's bizarre musical numbers. It's amazing that there's this untapped resource of creativity within this guy. It just sucks that he revels in the murder of hundreds of people and the genocide of a country. And the follow-up film, The Look of Silence, is about a man who whose older brother was killed by one of these death squads coming out and going forward to the men that perpetrated the killing and confronting them about it. It is super hardcore.
Yeah.
They're amazing, amazing, amazing documentaries. I really recommend you seek them out.
Fucking unsettling shit.
It's unsettling stuff. There's also, to plug another podcast and another great organization, 2 years ago at the Melbourne International Film Festival, The Look of Silence was playing there, and because Australia is so close to Indonesia and things, the filmmaker, Joshua Oppenheimer, who is now being told if he re-enters Indonesia, he will be arrested and never seen again, we'll say it lightly. He actually came, introduced the film, and then I went to a talk with him and the author and radio personality, John Safran. They did a Q&A together via Skype with the man who is the protagonist of Look of Silence. It's available as a podcast, weirdly also called The Talking Pictures.
Oh, yeah.
If any of that sounds interesting, I'm just plugging Myth at this point because I fucking love those guys. go look into that. It's a really wonderful discussion. But back to Idi Amin. We got sidetracked here, but it's an interesting point. One of the things I thought about while watching this was, I wanted to bring up, how effective do you think this is as a documentary?
Well, in terms of, did it achieve its goals?
Yeah.
Yes. Because, I mean, it seems like, from the outset, it wants you to not give you a point-by-point factual analysis of the man Idi Amin.
Yeah.
It wants to deliver Idi Amin through the eyes of himself.
Yeah.
Let him make a propaganda film, direct his own propaganda film, and you'll see that.
Yeah. I bring it up because it's unlike most documentaries you see in modern day, and how it would, say, hold up against a similar documentary made in modern day times, kind of an expose of a dictator or an expose of a leader, and in a negative light, I guess. In, like, the base one to jump to is, like, Fahrenheit 9/11, the Michael Moore documentary, which is so brazen in its delivery of, like, this guy's an idiot, makes it kind of rough to watch, I think.
Yeah, because it's, you get the impression that the filmmaker, Michael Moore, is really trying to make him look like an idiot.
He's pushing his opinion and his agenda, whereas with this film, like, I think Schroeder definitely makes his opinion known. It's very clear what he thinks about this man, but he allows Amin himself to reiterate that point for him. He never kind of hammers that point home with ridiculous music or there are the cutaways, but it's not montage of him fucking up or anything or doing ridiculous stuff. It's just him sitting there and talking like a fucking maniac.
Yeah, I mean, but like, you know, what else do you need?
Yeah,
that's, it's wonderful that he's picked his subject matter, going like, he can make his own film, and I'm going to get my point across.
Which is why the film, he adds the little subtitles calling it an auto-portrait, because it is just, let this guy go.
He's going to do all the work for me.
He's like, you're rolling, right? Just, this is gold. cold. Keep it going.
Oh, that's so sad, man. Like, I laughed initially because the fucking movie starts as if it's a Steve Zissou documentary with this, like, really lovely rhythmic tunes to, you know, slow zoom-ins of old,
like,
maps.
The map of, it's like, this is Uganda. Uganda is an African country, and it is...
Yeah.
You're saying the only thing that's missing is Noah Taylor with a point, giant point, it's just been here on the map.
Yeah. Even like, the French, like, text, yellow text on the black backgrounds, they had this very, Steve Zissou kind of style about it. Until it cut to the execution of two people roped to poles.
And their bodies being thrown into trucks.
Yeah.
Title sequence.
Yeah, fuck, man. So that was, like, the most harsh transition I've ever experienced in a documentary.
But it's also so effective because it lets... Like, it starts almost like a cheap... Like you said, it's this cheesy, like, 70s educational documentary where you're just like, yeah, whatever. Oh, fuck.
Mm.
We are not watching a standard expose here. This is going to be something different.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know enough about documentaries and, like, the earlier documentaries in the 60s and 70s, but how I don't know, I'm just going to ask you this question, if you know, cool. What's the fucking word? C, because starts with C. How naughty...
Controversial?
How controversial, thank you.
Yeah!
How controversial is it to film... people getting shot to death and putting it in a film in the early to mid 70s?
Not. I can't really answer that. I'm not
100%
sure. But I was just looking up because in a couple of films, time in the collection, I do know we have a film coming up called Hearts and Minds, which is an expose and kind of fly on the wall of the Vietnam War.
Okay.
And it was filmed on the ground with troops and things and has some absolutely brutal imagery. Was also made in 1974. So it seemed like... This is just me going off of my... I kind of super base knowledge on this. I'm kind of talking out my ass a bit here, but it seems to be
I just expect you to know everything about the film.
I know. But this is why I'm doing the podcast, so I can learn about film.
Right on.
It seems to me that early documentary films were specifically for educational purposes. And while documentaries retain that to kind of educate and shine a light on truths that are happening, in the late 60s and early 70s, there seemed to be a shift in the terms of form and structure of documentaries. And this is a prime example where it is just almost a talking head of a dictator. If you would have... Like, that's not really a film, yet it's so fucking interesting and engaging, and it's a brilliant documentary.
Mm.
But it's unlike a standard kind of what you would assume, like, educational kind of documentary about, like, we're talking about the heart and how that works today. And
here's the facts.
Yeah, here's the facts. Okay. It is just an it's just letting the camera roll on life, I guess. And it seems, on my very base knowledge, again reiterating that, that there seemed to be a kind of shift in the form around this time, which was allowing films like this to be made and appreciated, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, man. Yeah, so what other shit can we talk about?
I don't necessarily have a lot more. I've kind of laid most of my stuff on this one out there. This was also one where there was not a whole bunch on trivia, yet I did have this big kind of chunk of text I kind of wanted to talk about that was more about the release and the history of this film.
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, I could jump into that unless there was anything else you wanted to bring up on this one.
Well, I while I was watching, I found, because you obviously very early in the game, you realize that you can't really trust anything this guy's saying, and if you can't understand it at all.
Yeah.
So I was trying to figure out, like, who this guy is jumping on the internet and fucking around. And I loved his title at the end of his reign. Do you know about this massive title? So, obviously, in the documentary, he talks about how the British Prime Minister is just not talking to him anymore for some reason. He's not sending his letters back and all
that. He's not getting his plane that he's requested.
Yeah, so England broke any communication. Like, there's no diplomatic communication.
There's like, this guy's a monster and a warlord. Like, no.
It's like, no, yeah, there's no talking to this guy. There's no point.
Yeah.
So he, because of that thought, he had conquered Britain, right? So his, by the end of his reign, his title, which he did himself.
Gave to himself, yeah.
Self-titled, his Excellency President for Life, Field Marshal L. G. Dr. Idi Amin Dada, Lord of all the beasts of the earth and fishes of the seas and conqueror of the British Empire in Africa in general and Uganda in particular. That's his title.
That's kind of long to put on a driver's license.
There's more, actually, but there's a bunch more, but
yeah,
but that's it's like three other things.
Jesus Christ!
That are all like acronyms that I.
Which again just works. Oh, shit. Yeah, just works to hammer home the point of like this guy is Narcissus, like personified. Like he would drown trying to get his own reflection. Like, this piece of shit.
Yeah, so you know that's That's who he sees himself as.
Yeah. And the film works wonderfully to present that to the audience.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Fucking crazy shit.
Yeah, so we'll move on to the stuff that I had, which was... director Barbet Schroeder had characterized the film as a self-portrait by Amin. While Schroeder and cameraman Nestor Almendros were given unprecedented access to Amin's daily life, the documentary made it plain that... Many of the events, including the residents of the garrison town turning out en masse to greet Amin, were staged for their benefit. In several sequences, Amin actively directs the cameraman, in particular, pointing out in particular to points of interest, at one point shouting, "Film that helicopter! Look over there!"
Yeah.
And yeah, also in the scene where they're on the riverboat and he's like, "Film over here, move here, look at the alligator, I'm gonna yell at it and make it move." Like, he's... Even feeling he can rule over animals.
Well, it does say that in his title, man.
Yeah, that's true. He is ruler of beasts.
Yeah, that's right.
Amin's influence as a director, in quotes, went beyond the actual filming of Idi Amin Dada. As per agreement with Amin, Barbet Schroeder made two versions of the documentary. You already brought this up. The hour-long cut was delivered to Uganda and delivered to Amin, who apparently was very pleased with the result. The second version was released only outside of Uganda and contained additional half-hour of footage and the narration by Schroeder. According to Schroeder, Amin dispatched his agents to Britain to watch the film and write down a full transcript of its contents. Amin soon sent a letter to Schroeder requesting additional cuts to the film, but Schroeder refused. In response, Amin rounded up almost 200 French citizens living in Uganda and confined them to a hotel surrounded by the Ugandan army, supplying them with Schroeder's home telephone number and explaining that their release was conditional on Schroeder's acquiescence.
Fuck.
That's insane.
Yeah.
In the face of this dilemma, Schroeder made the requested cuts, replacing 2.5 minutes of excised footage with title cards, crediting the gaps to Amin.
Fucking hell, man.
That is a ballsy move. Cutting those moments out of your film, but just putting up a black title card that says, "This footage is cut because Idi Amin did this and made me cut this stuff out."
Yeah.
That's, like, as effective, if not more so.
Well, you have to, like, fuck.
Yeah.
Otherwise... You're going to indirectly kill 300 people.
200.
Sorry, 200 people. Fuck
me. On Amin's fall from power, Schroeder restored the missing material, and most versions seen today contain the full footage.
Motherfucker.
Insane, right? That's just like, yeah. He... There's not much else to say other than that.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Idi Amin died in 2003. Like, he lived.
He lived a long life,
like 80 years old or something.
Yeah.
So, you know.
He wasn't put in jail or anything, though, after he was. He left power. Was he? No.
I don't know.
To be honest, like, yeah, we should have had our friend Mike on this episode.
He knows history.
Or Eric. Both of those guys know their history and they're warlords. But I mean, unless you've got anything else, that'll kind of wrap me up for this episode.
We kind of honed in on... It's just the experience, isn't it?
It's a very tough one to talk about, and like I was kind of already prepared for this to be a short episode and just kind of concise and...
Yeah.
Because it is. It's a short film. It only runs for, what, just 90 minutes on the nose, but it is just five or six little moments of this guy rambling and just how you kind of interpret and extrapolate what he is doing and saying and kind of... The message is clear, this man's insane, so...
Yeah. But this doesn't even feel like a warning, you know, like... It's just like this unbiased record of a man's mind, to some degree.
Yeah, which is kind of great that it exists, too, as a historical record of, like... Don't let shit like this happen again! Don't let crazy people run countries!
Yeah, I can't... It sounds, well, if they're going to do a coup, you can't help. Unless
just do another coup. Keep doing coups until you have someone who's actually decent in charge.
That's right. Keep fighting until there's peace. That makes total sense.
Yeah. So on that note, we'll move on to the actual Criterion edition itself. So the film is still in print from Criterion as a one disc DVD that comes with the transcript of Idi Amin's request from cuts of the film. And the usual booklet and essays that Criterion usually do.
Okay.
So it just has that one special feature, but that's a super interesting one.
Yeah.
But yeah, unless we got anything else, that'll wrap us up for this week's episode, looking at general Idi Amin data.
I have nothing to say.
Yeah. If you have any comments or queries or think we've missed anything, please send us an email at thecriterionquest@gmail.com. Or hit us up on Twitter at Criterion Quest, or you can now find us on Facebook at The Criterion Quest. Other than that, we'll be back in a fortnight's time when we look at The Horse's Mouth, the film by Ronald Neim. I have no idea, other than the fact that it stars Alec Guinness.
Oh, yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be a comedy, so I'm in. And I thoroughly enjoy the other Ronald Neim film in the collection, Hopscotch. So I'm looking forward to this.
Well, that's coming up soon as well, right?
Yes, it is.
Soon-ish.
Yeah, and I've kind of teased on Facebook that we're going to have a very special guest for that one.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, I know who it is, but...
You know who it is, but we'll leave it.
It's cool, yeah.
Yeah. But thank you for listening, and we hope you've enjoyed the episode. But until next time, I'm Chris.
I'm Tom. See you next time.
Ooh, Idi. Idi Amin. Who wrote the lyrics of this? It's poetry. Idi Amin, Idi Amin, Idi Amin, Idi Amin, Idi Amin. Idi Amin, Idi Amin, Idi Amin, Idi 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 Amin, Amin Idi, Amin Amin Amin, Idi Idi Amin Amin.